Off top, in 1970, the Oakland A's hired a team astrologer. Play the music.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.
Welcome to the Dominique Foxworth Show. I'm here with my good friend, Charlie. I don't know if I can call you a friend or not, because all you've been doing is, I mean, you are my friend. I guess this is what friends do to each other. You just been giving me all weekend or all week about me not being a five-star recruit when I obviously did not make it up and I refuse to dig through the crates of my parents' house to find the proof.
So, first of all, if I was just saying nice things to you, I would not be your friend.
That's very true. That. I'd be so pissed.
The second I realized that you liked me is when you stopped saying nice, polite things to me.
Yeah, I was just being kind of casually nice as you are to people you don't really know. And then we became real friends. Then you get roasted.
The second I said something dumb and you referred to me as a bleeping idiot, I was like, I'm in.
That's my guy.
This is my dude.
Love him.
So the show has a new enemy. It used to be Kevin Clark, and it is still Kevin Clark, enemy of the show. Tom Lemming. Recruiting analyst. I guess this is ESPN, ESPN beef in theory. He didn't have you in his top 100 prospects in the country, and Rivals had you 17th overall, five star.
Oh, so I am a five star.
Not unanimous.
Oh, I never said that I was a unanimous five star. I said that I was a five star, and the proof is there. Tom Lemming doesn't agree.
I did a lot of deep dives into the 2001 college football recruiting class. A lot. And this is, it's not funny, but it's a little bit funny.
Shout out Rivals. We love you. Let's get a subscription. They still doing stuff?
Around? We had to fight to get behind that paywall. I really do need to subscribe after the content they just gave us. But number one recruit in your class was Joe Mauer. Potential Hall of Fame baseball player. Catcher for the Twins. Was national player of the year as a quarterback. Yeah. It's not funny. Concussions are not funny, but him choosing the professional baseball route and having his career ended by concussions is a little bit funny when he didn't. Well, he avoided the CTE of football.
Can we call it ironic or something like that? But I agree with you. Concussions are not funny, but we treat concussions. It's so funny how we've been socialized and we behave so differently around football concussions than we do like kickboxing concussions or boxing concussions. We cackle it all up.
The baseball concussions, it's like, Why isn't he hitting 350 anymore? What? What's going on?
Oh, we're
seeing two baseballs.
I think so. Your research for the Tom Lemming list. We don't like Tom Lemming now. We're Tom Lemming haters.
I mean, look, he had 25 defensive backs ahead of you at least because he did a top 25 by position. I think that with maybe the exception of Antrell Roll on that list, you're better than every single one.
All right, cool. Appreciate it.
He made a mistake.
He did.
If you issue an apology 23 years later, Kevin Clark can be the sole enemy of the show again.
Nah, it's going to take 23 years for me to forget. Or maybe half. That's what they say, right? For a breakup, it takes half as long. So, yeah. So, we'll be back friends with Tom Lemming in a little over a decade.
Yeah, I mean, this is like you guys saying Josh Allen was going to be a draft bust. Him missing you in his top 25.
Don't remind people of that. Stop it.
Everyone has misses.
I backtracked on that a long time ago. I even defended his interceptions. Me and Josh Allen are okay. I don't want to piss off that monster. That
Josh, come on the
football
show. We love you.
Nah, don't come on the show. I mean, I'll take it. Let me get a little boost.
Josh bump.
Bring me back to my high school and college days. I remember, so I enrolled the year before I played, or the year before I went to Maryland. I think it was Philip Rivers did an early enrollment thing. And I was like, I'm smart. I could do that. So I graduated early, and the second half of my senior year in high school, it was very stupid, but it worked out because it was so much fun to be a senior in high school. Like, I was one of the best football players in the state, and I'd already finished football season. It was so great. And you know what my dumbass did? Let me go be a freaking child on a man's team and go play spring ball at the University of Maryland, in which I got my ass whooped. I have a picture I should show you. I'll find it somewhere. It's like my ID. So I took the ID, school ID, because it wasn't natural enrollment period. The school ID picture taken was later. And I took it after, like, in the midst of spring ball. And I looked like I saw ghosts. I didn't have a barber yet. I had pimples all over my face. And I just looked like this, just dead in the eyes.
You'd just been eating hand cleans for a month and a half.
Just dead in the eyes. But the story that I was thinking about was, so my parents dropped me off. And because my mom was upset, they went to Disney World immediately after dropping me off. The day after, I have to do weight training. And we just get there. I get to the weight room. And they're like, hey, you're 17 years old. You need permission. So the whole
on a
team,
college campus. Yes,
the whole team is in the weight room lifting weights, and I'm sitting in Dwight Galt, Deej was his nickname, the strength coach office, waiting for my parents to fax a signed permission slip from Orlando at Disney World back to University of Maryland campus so I could go in there and bench press damn near nothing.
At that age, you what did you weigh, 160 pounds?
I was 150 something when I showed up
and
there.
It was 2001, so you were probably wearing gigantic clothes.
Oh, enormous. Lots of jerseys and lots of huge baggy clothes.
So after your permission slip signed, you walked into a weight room of men probably throwing around a ton of weight and probably looked like a child, like a slender man.
I've told this story. So we had cut off we all have the same uniform for everything. So we had like the shorts, black shorts that mine were hyper baggy, and we had cutoff shirts. Our weightlifting shirts would say like Maryland football, something, blah, 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 blah. And they were all cut off. And I walked in there looking ashamed. But I didn't feel, this might speak to the ego that I had and maybe I still have, but I felt like I belonged. And I've told this story before about Karome Cox.
Oh, you tried to fight him, right?
Yeah, tried to fight him. So what happened was Karome was one of the starting corners. He was a couple years older than me and had been in the program for a while and was probably 195 corner, like ripped.
Yeah.
Very muscular dude. And so over the course of a few weeks of me getting comfortable and me actually starting to play well in spring ball, we would have these things that young men do because young men are dumb, is you could challenge somebody to like box. Locker room boxing. You challenge somebody and you didn't have to dislike them or it didn't have to be a reason. But if you did have a beef with somebody, you challenge them. So Karome was one of the starting corners and I decided that I wasn't going to like him. We're friends now and he's coaching maybe at UVA now, but he's a coach. He was one of the starting corners and I was like, the other starting corner was Tony Okolowon. He was better than Karome. So I was like, all right, that's the one. I want him. Karome hit me with a hook. And to this day, I appreciate that he is not a malicious person because he could have kept going because I think I went black for a second. I didn't go down, but he hit me with a hook where I was like, oh, I woke up. And
seeing stars.
Yeah, he stopped. He stopped because he's a good human. And that's probably why we became friends later on. And yeah. We played together in Denver. He ended up a free agent in Denver when I was there, and we got into a couple fights there, not with each other, with other people special teams.
You started over him at that point. Yeah. You were right long term. okay, so speaking of Josh Allen, there is a crazy playoff scenario brewing. If the Steelers beat the Ravens, who are starting Snoop Huntley and presumably many other second string players, the Jaguars beat the 5-11 Titans, which seems likely given that they need to make the playoffs. And the Dolphins beat the Bills on Sunday Night Football. The Bills are eliminated from the playoffs. The Dolphins have clinched the playoff spot, would drop from the 2 to the 6 seed, and would go into Kansas City if they lose that game, which, say what you want about the Chiefs not being good, you're still going against Patrick Mahomes in a playoff game at home. So my question to you is, what is the more likely scenario? And we can go through all the iterations of this. The Bills miss the playoffs or they make the Super Bowl?
Gosh, so this unusual circumstance where you could be the 2 seed or you could be out of the playoffs, I've come to believe is perfect for the Bills.
Yeah.
Because that's how I feel about Josh Allen and the Bills. It's like, he could be the best in football. And he could also not be the best in football sometimes. But you would never hear me say that because I love Josh Allen. And yeah. I'm sorry for what I said about
future guest.
Yeah. Future guest, Josh Allen. I got a funny story for you. I told Bomani this on his show. It's another sidetrack. Sorry. But
it's okay.
You'll like
we'll
this.
Get back to
so
it.
So I was talking to Mina about how right we were about Lamar Jackson coming out the draft. And I reminded her that I did a mock draft, and Mina and I wrote a story together about Lamar Jackson. But after that story, I did a mock draft where I had him going 7 to Jacksonville and said in that blurb that I wrote, I said he was the best quarterback in the draft. And I was like, that feels good. Let me look this up. I looked up the mock draft and screenshotted the blurb to send it to Mina, and I sent it to her. And then as I'm reading it, I said that Jacksonville should trade up because not only is the city named after him or some cutesy writing thing, but also because it would pair him with talented young offensive coordinator Nathaniel Hackett.
Oof.
I had such a good, I would love to tweet this out and remind people how smart I am about football, but now I can't because I ruined it.
No, that's perfect.
It's like, and at that point, Nathaniel Hackett had had success with Blake Bortles in the playoffs during design quarterback runs. So I was like, this is perfect.
The Usain Bort era.
Yeah, I'm so smart. And then he ruined it. Anyway, back to what you were talking about.
The Bills.
They're really good.
Yeah.
And they're really scary. I think the answer to your question is, obviously to me, it's miss the playoffs altogether. Mm. Seems more likely than to make it to the Super Bowl. Because to make it to the Super Bowl, we would be asking the Bills to do something that we have not seen them do this season, which is be consistent.
Yeah.
And like be consistently good. And it's injuries, blah, 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 offensive coordinator changes. Like it's 9/11 scandals and midseason 9/11 scandals.
Coach, they might not even want there.
It seems like a lot to ask for them to go undefeated in a postseason with that roster in those holes, which seems a lot more likely. And if you remember 5, 6, 7 weeks ago, I guess, when this all started, I think their playoff probability was like,
I think it went down to 11%.
Yeah, I was going to say the teens. It went lower than the teens. It was preteen. And this, what they've accomplished up until this point is like worth celebrating and really impressive and a credit to their fortitude and a credit to their head coach and sticking together because they've had a lot of things go on. But it's hard for me to imagine that that team then rips through the AFC.
So I respect your analysis.
However.
They are not missing the postseason. And let me tell you why. Because you can say what you want about the Dolphins dropping to the sixth seed and it's going to be Sunday Night Football and there are things that could happen ahead of time. Like this might not even matter. Both teams might be in the playoffs. But if you are the Dolphins, and on this podcast, we do not condone intentionally losing games. We do not condone tanking. We know that there's a culture of winning. But Tyreek Hill has had a high ankle sprain. Jalen Waddle's been banged up all year. Devon Achan is coming back and still trying to get in form for the playoffs from a knee injury. Raheem Mostert has a knee injury. Tua has had so many injuries that the fact that he's been clean this year is a miracle.
He messed up his shoulder last week.
And messed up his shoulder. And last week, Mike McDaniel left Bradley Chubb in a game too long and he tore his ACL. And to me, it's not condoning losing, but you are a dumb team and a dumb coach if you leave those guys in the game too long when you have the playoff spot locked in and there's a chance that it doesn't even matter because like they should not be scared of playing Kansas City.
Right.
They are a better football team than the Kansas City Chiefs at this point. And the only way that they're not is if the best player in the NFL, who's not Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill is out and those guys are injured.
Going to Kansas City. Yeah. I enjoy your pitch. You are doing a good job selling it because you're leaving out the portions that seem most relevant to this and leaving out the portions that cut against your argument.
That's right.
The next step of arguing.
That's how you do it.
The next step of arguing is you have to present the opposing position and then undercut that in some way, but you can't undercut that. What is the other likely option of who they will play in the playoffs and where?
I mean, if they were the 2 seed?
Yeah.
Like, probably someone from the AFC South.
There you go.
Yep.
They should play harder in this game than any game. So I guess the
but
question
is... But
they
will lose to that team if they get guys injured.
Yeah, that's the question is, do you think you have a better chance against Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City off a week of rest?
Mm-hmm.
Or a better chance against the AFC South at home having played those guys? Give me that. I would play as hard as I could. I would play as intense in this game if I was the Dolphins. They are not a team that I think are so good and so comfortable that it doesn't matter. And if they're playing, if you're playing for seeding or positions, like that seems like a more basketball-y thing to do than football.
That's what I was wondering about. Yeah. It feels way more basketball-y, but like, I don't get why teams don't jockey for it in the NFL ever.
I think it's probably too hard because the NFL is good about like the time windows and stuff. Yeah. And it's like, you can't really think that much about it. And the best thing you can do is go out there and win. I think the obvious answer is that they need to go beat the Bills and get a home playoff game. And also, this doesn't weigh into the fans' calculation, but if you think that the owners have any input on how intense you take this game,
home playoff game,
I don't know the exact number, but it's probably looking at $10, $12, $13 million to host a home playoff game.
So about that, I have one other follow-up question on the concept of this. If you're the Ravens, because I'm looking at the AFC. Mm-hmm. I think you could actually make a case that the Bills are the second best team in the AFC. Like, you, not saying they definitely are. I think there's that tier, but I think like they've been playing that well for the last 5 weeks since their back has been against the wall and the AFC has been so erratic. If you're the Ravens, is that a team where you're just like, and I know they're starting their second string guys, but do you sort of try and intentionally tank that game to knock the Bills out of the playoff? Because that is the type of thing where it's actually a competitive advantage.
Right. Yeah. That's a lot of the culture stuff that I talk is influenced by my experience at the Ravens. Mm-hmm. That is not something that anyone there will explicitly do or talk about and would be shunned if they suggested it. But Snoop starting, which is a capable quarterback. They were competitive in the playoffs last year with Snoop, and they won some games with Snoop. So it's a possible, it's a possibility that they could win this game. But yeah, I'm fine with avoiding Josh Allen or making his path as difficult as possible. I don't have any problem with that, especially when you've earned this time off. So I get that for the Ravens. I've been rolling this stat out all since last week and all on Get Up and everywhere I can, and no one really seems to think it's as mind-blowing as I do, but that according to ESPN analytics, you would take the 49ers over the field. There's 61% chance, 61% chance to get to the Super Bowl, 34 to win the Super Bowl. And for the Ravens, it's 52% to get to the Super Bowl and 25% to win the Super Bowl. It's since 2015, I think the only other team that's gone over 50% has been the Chiefs on a couple of different occasions, and they were barely over 50%. It's crazy to me. I think part of it is because there's only one first round bye. I think that probably increases the probability, but the probability according to our analytics is just mind blowing to me.
I assume that heavily weights DVOA to too high of a standard in a single sample size, because I'm just thinking, like, I know before the Ravens game, I think the 49ers had like the third best DVOA team of all time, and the Ravens were like 11th. So they're both elite, but like the 49ers were like historically good. It was like the 07 Pats and the 01 Rams ahead of them. But also, like, those analytics models, they hit the Celtics as a 65% chance to win the title last year. Like, they focus way too hard on,
well,
like,
I think you would agree with this. We've had this conversation before, that I think playoff basketball is significantly different from regular season basketball. I think to whatever degree NFL playoffs are different from regular season playoffs, I think it's minor.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. But it's single elimination, so anything could happen. So.
And like, to me, that's probably more of the difference is probably more at this point, because those teams are so far ahead of the field analytically. They probably weight the NFC as significantly worse.
Right. No. Yeah. I think they weight the NFC as significantly worse. They're not saying that the 49ers are better. They're saying that the 49ers' path is easier. I just think it's, again, I roll a stat out thinking it's going to blow somebody's mind, and it doesn't blow anybody's mind. Like, the field, they are telling you, the stat nerds are saying, take this team over other team.
Hold on, though. Wouldn't you be shocked if the 49ers don't make the Super Bowl, barring an injury?
I guess football shocked. I might be football shocked. I wouldn't be genuinely shocked. How many times has a one seed not made it Super Bowl?
Definitely. Like, but, like, normally there are two good teams in the conference.
Yeah. Well, all right, that's fine. And I think the change of the schedule with one first round bye has skewed it more to these top teams. But it's, I don't know, I think it's mind blowing, but I guess your mind is not as blown as I want it to be.
No. It's like, I think if it had been a couple years ago, if it had been a normal conference, if this had been like a Chiefs Bills year when the teams were really good in the AFC and you had one at like an above 60% chance, I'd be like, that's
My guess is the Eagles numbers were as good last year as the 49ers are, or at least close, but the 49ers existed.
Yeah, there wasn't a clear affiliation.
So right. All right. Cool. Moving on. Ruin my fun.
No, I mean, injuries will change all, because like, this is the type of thing where someone's going to play back the clip and be like, you're an idiot. And it's like, well,
don't they?
I
would assume, I guess maybe they don't factor in like
sliders for injuries are turned off.
Or they don't factor in injury probability.
Yeah.
But I mean, I guess they have to, because they have to factor in like the history of what happens in that position, which is some injuries happen. All right. Well, this is a long sidebar
that's
that
good,
we probably didn't
good
need.
Podcasting. I loved it.
So I enjoyed it.
So let's talk about the AFC South with that we just talked about. The Texans can clinch the AFC South
with
a win over the Colts
America's
and a Jaguars
team.
Loss, who and they can just clinch a playoff spot with the win. But this is a real question. CJ Stroud is back and playing. I mean, he's playing fine. He played fine in his game back, but the offense just looks significantly better. Shocker. He's an awesome quarterback. And the Jaguars have been in neutral for the second half of the season since they were 8-3. And we, on our podcast, discussed if they could be the one seed.
Yes.
Spoiler alert, they cannot. Which team to you would be a scarier playoff team? The Texans or the Jaguars? A question that would have been crazy before the season.
Yes, definitely the Texans to me. I think it's definitely the Texans. The Jaguars feel, I don't know. It's not even about feel for the Jaguars as much as it's like about evidence. The Texans are getting better. They were sidetracked for a moment when their quarterback got knocked out, but they still won one of those games. Yeah. Their
DJ defense, Bathard.
We're fawning over the quarterback, but the defense has gotten progressively better over the course of the season. That feels like a team, and to the degree that playoff experience matters, they don't have that in NFL experience. They're a relatively young team. You could always make the argument that that is like an advantage. You don't know what you get into. Like that sort of thing is out there. I know. I'm just saying that is a hard, because if they win, we're going to say they didn't know to be nervous about it. If they lose, we're going to say they didn't have enough playoff experience. So who knows? It could cut either way. But I think if we're just looking at the teams, I'd rather play the team that is struggling and feels like they're backing into the playoffs than the team that feels like we don't even know what their ceiling is yet. They're still approaching it for their quarterback and for their roster. And yeah, I think that's an easy answer to me, which is surprising given what we know, because the Jags were the team that made the great comeback last year in the playoffs. And we were looking at them even before the season started as a legitimate AFC contender.
So I think that I'm with you. I think the Texans are the clear answer. And I do think it's about both teams. I think the Texans offense with CJ Stroud, and I know this is not a slight on the defense, where Will Anderson seems to have been a legitimate culture changer, and your guy Derek Stingley Jr., who you said could be a Hall of Fame cornerback, something happened in the middle of the season and he's turned into an A1 guy, and that probably goes to D'Amico Ryan's coaching also, as he's just walked in and been excellent. But the Stroud thing is stunning. Like, I think the fact that he is, I don't want to do quarterback tiers, but if you're going to go down the best quarterbacks in the playoffs, he is closer to the top than I think a lot of people would realize as a rookie. And he comes in and the offense functions immediately at a really high level.
I'm with you in not wanting to do quarterback tiers, but I'm okay with doing quarterback sections or quarterback rooms, because there is a room that CJ Stroud has already shown us that he can get into. And that room is a room that we haven't seen from Brock Purdy yet, despite how good he is. And a lot of quarterbacks, the room is, we down by a bunch of points. Yeah. can you bring us back? And CJ can do that. When they know you're going to throw the ball, what are you going to do with that situation?
I'm a good person, so I'm not going to make the joke that he's in a different room than Dak Prescott. But I did not make that joke.
You don't have to. Dak's done it.
Dak is in a room with Kirk Cousins while CJ's
trying. No, stop it. Dak Prescott has shown that he can bring his team back from down a bunch of points.
I didn't make
that joke. He's done it in the playoffs. I'm not saying that Dak Prescott has done that inside and outside of the playoffs. I'm not saying it, since you're not saying what you're saying.
Glad neither one of us said that. We're just complimenting CJ Stroud.
He's way to go, excellent. CJ. He's really sick. Way to go, CJ.
I mean, I think that at some point over the offseason, we should do a deep dive on how historic quarterbacks that young have been that good, because I keep looking at it and I know it was his second season when Dan Marino took over the league. Right. But I think guys in their early 20s who have been that excellent that quickly, even some of those great players like Mahomes didn't play till the second year. Peyton Manning didn't take off till the second year. CJ Stroud doing it this early and being so mistake free while being such a good thrower of the football. That's and I know we're going to get to Aaron Rodgers, but that was what made Aaron Rodgers special for so long. I could be in attack mode while not making turnovers. It's this is rare.
We're going to get to Aaron Rodgers? I don't want to get to Aaron Rodgers.
Well, we're not going to talk about Aaron Rodgers. We're not going to talk about what, where he belongs in the quarterback list, but we are going to talk about the Packers.
Well done.
Because this is a story that I actually think has sort of gone under the radar. The Packers could make the playoffs with Jordan Love in their first year with Aaron Rodgers. I just want to say, how big of a deal is that?
It's an enormous deal. I think anyone who says that the market doesn't matter, I think people have come to accept that was something we used to say 5-10 years ago. Mm-hmm. That obviously isn't true. Coming off CJ Stroud, can you imagine if CJ Stroud was doing what he's doing in New York?
Like, crazy.
It'd be bananas because he is playing that well.
Yeah.
But it's for the Texans. And I mean, they're in Houston and they're a relatively new franchise.
They're not the Cowboys.
Yeah, and they're not the Cowboys. So the market size matters and the team matters. In relation to the Green Bay Packers, I think that although they're a big name team, I think Love starting out poorly took our eyes off of it. But the big picture idea about them, even though it's not 100% certain that Love is like going to be in their future franchise quarterback long term, they already have won. Mm-hmm. They're competitive now. They got Love another year to see what they got out of him on a reasonable deal.
Very
they
reasonable
signed him.
Deal.
Yeah. It's like in the teens.
Yeah.
They signed him to an extension this offseason. And the Packers won this deal as soon as Aaron Rodgers got hurt. And whether he would have gotten hurt here or there, it doesn't matter. What the Jets received, what they thought they were receiving was a ticket to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
What they got was not that at all. And the Packers have seemed to, I don't know the inside of the culture of that organization that well, but it seems like the results suggest that they're doing something right consistently. Even though they don't know how to play well on defense, they seem to understand how to build a team to maintain competitiveness in their division.
I think this has been, I'm totally with you. And just to build off of that, we don't know if where Jordan Love falls in like the franchise quarterback things, the roadmap that we talked about earlier this year, where he went from mystery box to who knows what he is now. But like since week 11, 16 touchdowns, one interception. In the draft arsenal that the Packers have, they have their first, two twos, two threes, and two fours in the upcoming draft. They have two good young tight ends who are hard position to be awesome at immediately, and it's becoming one of the deeper positions of the league. We know how valuable it is to have two of them. Rodgers was upset with the front office for not drafting receiver help in the first round and drafting other positions, drafting even Jordan Love. But let's look at what they have. Christian Watson, Jaden Reed, who's like a Debo light, Dontavian Wicks. That's not even talking about Romeo Doubs. And basically since then, since those guys have started developing, which, by the way, not shocking, incredibly young players take at least half a season to develop. Jordan Love has looked like elite. And those are all the things that Aaron Rodgers wanted, but seem to prevent the Packers from actually having and developing.
It's interesting because the Aaron Rodgers thing, I think, is less about, he can't argue, and I don't think he ever did really argue that he didn't have the support that he needed. He argued, or the argument was made for him, that they didn't use high picks to get receivers, but he always had Devontae. He always had a great offensive line, which I think is more predictive than just about anything. Is you can see like Jared Goff's a great example. If you can keep pressure off of Jared Goff, he's very good.
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers doesn't need that much protection, but if you can give him that much protection, he can win you back-to-back MVPs and have you in the conference championship.
Yeah, but he also wanted to have Alan Lazard and Randall Cobb and MVS and Dalvin, and demanded Dalvin Cook on the Jets. Like so much of this, all of this stuff, it was his own destructive tendencies. Like, I, for such an open-minded guy, I'm not sure he was open-minded to the idea of Christian Watson and Doubs the way he should have been last year, or trusting the front office to bring in young receivers and tight ends, because that talent base, I know Garrett Wilson is awesome. Breece Hall is awesome. If you look at those rosters, obviously the Jets defense, those offensive weapons are better than what the Jets have, period. Full stop. And then when you include the offensive line, it's not even close.
Yeah, I mean, especially when Breece Hall was coming off of injury, like it wasn't even at this season. But yeah, it seemed like it was more about like the gestures than it was about anything else.
Yeah.
And like, I think, I can't remember the name of the book, but there's one book I read a long time ago that was talking about how we make decisions, or how we form our opinions is based off of impulse. And then we find like post hoc justifications to support what we feel. And the justifications happen so fast that we think that we logically came to this position, when in actuality, we built a lawyerly argument for something that we felt.
Yeah.
That's what Aaron Rodgers was doing. It's like he felt disrespected by the Jordan Love pick.
Yeah.
And then he was like, all right, well, yeah, then do this. You do that. And then we look up and it's like, you guys are in the conference championship every year.
Yeah.
You are winning MVPs. They are doing something right. So while I always argue for player empowerment, and I will defend players who try to force their front offices to do stuff, it's only the players who are front offices are failing them. Like LeBron forcing his way to Miami. Maybe you don't like that he made it a surprise, but how could anybody ever be upset about that when they're like, hey, we're going to get you some help. Shaq.
Yeah. No, I mean, this is totally different because Rodgers was just wrong. I mean, you look at Jordan Love. I think if you had said before the season that he would be 2 touchdowns off the league lead in touchdown passes, you'd be like, that is amazing. And even if we like him as a thrower of the football, that's shocking.
Yeah. No, I think, they haven't been a team that I've been hugely focused on, but I know he's been playing better. But I don't think I knew he was playing as well as the numbers suggest. You picked out touchdowns and interceptions. You ain't pick out anything else. You didn't go with yards per attempt. You didn't go with QBR. You didn't go with nothing like
that. I didn't mention that they almost lost to the Panthers 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, but... I saw that was in the back of my head. But, I mean, you avoided the analytics stats. You went with old-fashioned counting stats, which suggests to me that you had decided what argument you wanted to make.
And think QBR.
Not bad. I'll take it. I'll take it.
Of the league and he's bad for half the season.
Yeah, great. All right. You win.
Hey, we're on the same team. We agreed on all of that.
We did. All right. Thanks, Charlie. Let's talk to Bomani.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, on Añejo Tequila. Came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic liqueur. Barnstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Swimsuit, check. Sunscreen, check. Phone charger, check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or in a carry-on. And the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
All right, welcome in to Great Bomani Jones. Thank you for joining us. I'm just getting off of During the Right Time with him, which you all should probably rate, review, subscribe, and all that stuff too. And in our conversation, we had a topic pop up that we didn't get to dive into that I thought would be interesting because we had two legendary, I guess, coaches that seem like they're kind of on the hot seat. One is probably going to get fired or at least move on, going to retire. I don't know. I guess he's not going to retire. And Bill Belichick. And there's a lot of noise around Mike Tomlin that I think's quieted some because he might sneak back into the playoffs. But it brought up an interesting question to me about hiring coaches. And it's like the results, and it's not results versus process, because I think a lot of people like to put those against each other, but it's results over, for lack of a better term, like just knowing that that coach, you know, and do you move on from that? So I'd like to hear, I think the Tomlin conversation or the Tomlin question is probably easier than the Belichick, but where do you fall on either of those guys?
All right. So the thing with Belichick, I think we have to keep in mind is, so I look at the San Antonio Spurs and I see Bill Belichick. By the way, Greg Popovich is living the exact same life as Bill Belichick is right now, and nobody's talking about it. They're the worst team in the NBA, and they've been sorry for 4 straight years, and there's no defending the sorry that they've been. I at least have seen Bill Belichick's team be good in the last 3 years. I saw them make the playoffs 2 seasons ago, right? But part of why Popovich could kick it like he kicked it when they were winning was he had a superstar that was willing to put up with it. Like, I seen something once in some interview, I can't remember, some story about Popovich, but he made a very important point that no matter who you were and no matter how Popovich talked to you, you had to take it if he was also going to Tim Duncan. And Tim Duncan was going to take it and keep it going. That was the thing about Tom Brady with the Patriots was Belichick could kick it like he kicked it, and Tom Brady went along with it, which then meant everybody else had to go along with it. There ain't no Tom Brady there now to go for it. So I wonder how well, unless he's willing to make an alteration in his entire get down, I don't know if he can still be the coach. To me, it's not a matter of whether he forgot about the football stuff, but it's dealing with the people stuff in order to make that happen. With Tomlin, what the who's winning with the quarterbacks they've had the last 5 years? Like, I'm trying to figure out realistically what people think the Steelers are supposed to be, given that they've blown this quarterback thing.
Yeah, and I think so. There's a couple things. The Popovich thing is another question altogether in that they've been It's a culture question to me, is, and one of the arguments that I make against tanking generally, and you hate tanking too for this reason and many others, but don't become professional losers. And it's hard to then change that, turn that ship around. So in basketball, while Popovich was losing, I think part of it was an understanding that that's how you rebuild in basketball. Whereas I think most football teams don't look at it that way, and understandably so. So that while they will give you some grace when you're in a rebuilding period, they will not just completely write it off, which is what it felt like in San Diego or San Antonio, where there's like, oh, don't worry about it. Pop's great. We just got to get some more players in here. Oh, and then when Wimby was available, then everybody's like, oh, you're doing a good job. Lose it all up. Now Wimby's here. You got him. You're trying to coach him in slowly or whatever. Y'all need to be more respectable than this if you got one of these guys.
They got the worst point differential in the NBA, which is a way of saying they're the worst team in the NBA. But that's what the Patriots are. Like, the Patriots are basically kicking it the same way in the NFL. There's no excuse for them to be as bad as they are. Now, you can make the argument, I think it's a fair one, well, maybe you just take personnel control away from Bill Belichick and it goes from there. By the way, the last time a team made that decision, that's when the Browns hired Ozzie Newsome and then became the Ravens. And then it became the beginning of whatever everything else was that came after that. But they've, maybe that's the call, but I want to say 1985 was the last good year the Dallas Cowboys had with Tom Landry. 86, 87, 88, they were bums. He never coached again. It wasn't because Tom Landry didn't know nothing about football no more, right? It's not that he just forgot how you do this, but it just might be time is up for you at that point. Because if you bring Bill Belichick into your new team, you got to turn everything over to him in a way that his last team said wasn't a good idea. So what do you do?
I think it's unrealistic to expect Bill Belichick to give up the decision-making power he has in the front office, not only because of his ego and what he's accomplished and how, if I was Bill Belichick, and if anybody was Bill Belichick, I'd say, get out of my office with that. I got 6 Super Bowls and you expect me to hand this over, but also because he's become such an important part and such a fulcrum to that whole organization that it seems impossible to now, we got to go through this guy. It just seems unfeasible as a way to do it. So if you're going to move on, they have to move on from him. I'm less likely to move on because I know he's a good coach. And maybe that's just me being a little bit scared, but chances that you're going to get a good coach the next time are very low. You're probably going to get a bad coach. You're probably going to get a few bad coaches before you find, if you ever find, another good coach. And that's what takes me over to the Tomlin stuff. And I think most people who are arguing against Tomlin is they haven't had any playoff success in recent years. And also, your point about the quarterbacks is also about the offense. And he's hired these trash coordinators that no one else seemed to want. And while he is overachieving for that team, if you're not winning championships, what are we doing here? I think is what they would say.
But on both of those teams, again, what are you realistically winning with Mac Jones, the ghost of Ben Roethlisberger, Kenny Pickett, Mason Rudolph, Duck Hodges, right? Like, I don't know what winning either of these teams are supposed to do. The ghost of Cam Newton, we talked about that. Like, I just don't know what winning you're supposed to do with any of those teams that we just laid out as being there. I don't know what best case scenario was for any of those teams.
Is there? So I think the argument for moving on from either of them, because there would be a bidding war, I guess, if either of them became available for teams to hire them. And nobody in the fan base or in the coaching staff or in the front office or in the ownership suites would say that these guys are currently bad coaches. So the argument for moving on from them is like, we just got to get a fresh start. Which always feels like, while I know it to be something that's probably true, it just always feels like a bad idea. And I mean,
yeah, unless it's something toxic, right? Yeah. Like Philadelphia did that with Andy Reid. I would argue it turned out to be a good idea. Even if the Chip Kelly thing had ups and downs, it was time for both of them to move on. And I think it wound up being okay after they did that. Like, sometimes that is the case. Like, it's just time to bring in somebody new, but it does help if it's time to bring in somebody new is with a plan for who the somebody new is, right? Like it's not just we moving on. It's we got to do this, but wait till you see how I flip it.
Yeah, Chip Kelly is a good flip. Gerard Mayo, we'll see. That's who everyone keeps saying. And
dog, he better run from that job. He better not take that. Don't do that. Don't. Oh, no, baby. Baby, no, 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 no. I understand. It's right there. You may think you ain't never going to get no other chance. All those things are possible. The 10-foot pole. Oh, no. No, following a legend. And oh, no. Oh, oh. Yeah. Whoa. Whoa. I can't. Oh, hell no. No. Oh, no, no. You be better off following Nick Saban. Hell no. Don't do this.
That's another one. You said, sir. You said on your show that I was surprised by it, that you thought Nick Saban's not coming back.
No, I just think if I were him, I wouldn't come back. Like, I'm old. I have to tell you, I have to do this right fast. I'm sorry. I see you changing direction. This, I have to do this right fast. And this is something that everybody needs to understand, right? You'll always hear about how bad Pete Carroll was when he was the coach of the Patriots. He had like 1 year with the Jets before they fired him. People act like he was such a washout with the Patriots. His record in those years with the Patriots was 10-6, 9-7, and 8-8, and they fired him. Okay? I'm just saying all that to say, Gerard Mayo, you don't want these problems, dog. You don't want to do it.
That, I mean, the Gerard Mayo situation is like, it's the same to me as what you're alluding to with the college situation is it worth it? Because the college job is different. I guess there is an amount of money where I would be interested in being a college football coach. I'd be ridiculous to say that there isn't. But it's higher than what you think I'm probably worth, because the idea that you gotta be perpetually recruiting not only the kids in high school, but the dudes on your roster. Mm-hmm. Like, what? We often say that it being a coach is like being a CEO. I don't know if that's true, but it sounds like in college, being a coach ain't about being a coach anymore. You're doing very little coaching.
I hear you, but what I'm saying about Mayo also is this. You think they're going to give him any power? Like, you're going to bring this dude in, I guess he's in his late 30s, right? And after you've had the guy who had all the power in the world, the new regime is going to give very little power to the head coach. If he's under the circumstances, they got a dude that's in, and I don't think he doesn't have a great deal of leverage. Like, it wouldn't be like if they hired D'Amico Ryans, who had a great deal of leverage, because there would be a lot of people that wanted to hire him. Only people really be talking about hiring Gerard Mayo was them, brother. Oh, damn, I told on myself. But don't do it. 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 Don't do it.
You're right. I think that Jonathan Kraft, who was probably running more and more of the Patriots these days, his entire like adult life has been with Bill Belichick having all the power and control inside that organization. I don't think that they're going to hand it off to Gerard Mayo. And lots of people think
they're not going to hand it off to Gerard Mayo. Hell no, they're not going to do that.
Oh, gosh, I don't want to.
Get out of your goddamn mind. Drop. No. Like, that's what I'm saying. I hope he know this. Don't do it, man.
It's one of those things where it's like when people, I don't want to name anybody in particular, but it's a cash grab.
I feel you.
What was the guy that was in Houston? For a hot second.
You talk about David Culley and Lovie Smith.
Culley. David Culley's like, I take this. Give me that money.
This all I'm saying is one thing that you can't get the time back that you lose while you're doing that job, but what also the time that it's going to take off your life.
Yeah.
You can't ignore that. Like, we have not seen the Boston the Boston animal in a long time. It's kind of like the Alabama fan. We ain't really seen it happen in football because they've been so good for 20 straight years. They coming for your neck if you're the next person to take that job, no matter who you are.
It was like 5 years ago, I think, 5 or 6 years ago, when you explained to me what it was like in Alabama, the expectations. And I believed you because I liked you and I trust you, but I ain't really know. But I kind of know now. Them boys is upset because he took a bad team. Not a bad team, but he took a team that had no business in the playoffs and won a SEC championship against the team that hadn't lost in two damn years, and he went to overtime against a team that I thought was better and barely lost by 3 yards, and they like, They down there like, I don't think nobody won them out, but they like, Y'all should not need to think. Y'all should not need to,
His mistake is the fact that they ain't had no business being there. It ain't never supposed to be like this. They ain't never supposed to not have no reason.
Oh, gosh.
Never.
They are crazy down there. Well, we got off of the Tomlin stuff. I think there's probably not much there to talk about. Maybe people have come off of that believing it was a thing that was possible. But I do have new perspective on the Patriots. I still wouldn't fire that man. That man still can coach. That defense still is good. We just going to have to figure it out. We're going to hope we get lucky with a quarterback, because I'm not moving on, especially if I'm Robert Kraft. I'm going to go get one of these other young whippersnappers that come up here and ruin all this. Well, no thanks.
That's the issue. Like, again, they think maybe they think Gerard Mayo that dude. Maybe they do. And he might be. It don't matter, Gerard. If you could do it there, you could do it anywhere, my brother.
I like this public service announcer. That's what this
look, man, this segment turned into. Nobody is setting up for success under them circumstances. Nobody is.
Got a little
ain't nobody made that disappears. Work but George Seifert. George Seifert made it work.
I mean, Barry Switzer. Does that count? Nah. A little?
He wasn't a legend. Jimmy wasn't a legend. Like, yeah, Jimmy, that point, was a back-to-back Super Bowl champion, but he wasn't a legend. Bill Walsh was the genius, and George Seifert came behind that and won two Super Bowls.
I mean, frankly, as much as we talk about how the Shanahan offense has taken over all of football, like, Shanahan is a Walsh disciple, and it is all predicated on that. Bill Walsh is like a seminal Mount Rushmore type NFL figure. To follow that and still win some championships is pretty impressive.
Yes. And Bill Walsh, kind of the Branch Rickey of NFL coaching.
Heard.
People don't know that.
And Kyle Shanahan is keeping that spirit alive. Look around at these coaches who ain't white. Where they come from?
That's right.
I was telling people, like, as much as we celebrate Shanahan's offensive acumen, I point out that, like, the defense has always been great. And you want to know how great the defense is? They got a Lebanese man, a head coaching job in the NFL. That's how great the defense has been there, is they got this man a head coaching job for the New York Jets and then went on to get DeMeco Ryans a job. Them defenses have been great.
And it's his defense.
Yeah.
Like, you have to realize Steve Wilson's up there. Steve Wilson, the defense coordinator, all the time, ain't running his defense.
Mm-hmm. Like, Steve, you can come in here, but you're going to have to change. Don't bring none of your terminology. Don't bring none of your philosophy. It's going to take you a little while to catch on. This is what we do here. This is what gives me trouble. This is what you're going to have to do, because this is how it's going to work. All right, Bomani, I appreciate you hopping on with me. Again, everyone, check him out. The Right Time, rate, review, subscribe, download, rate, review it after you rate, review mine, of course. Do it at the same time. You ain't got nothing to do. All right, we out.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads. He's so
good. How has Dominique been lately?
Bad or good?
Let's find out. This is Roses and Thorns.
All right, time for your favorite segment with my favorite person, the catch of this podcast. Roses and Thorns with Ashley Fox. Why are you laughing so hard?
That's what we were just talking about. Anyway, thank you. I said, as much as I like a confident man who knows he's the catch, I want my man to also, like, publicly proclaim, that he adores me and thinks I'm the catch. So thank you
publicly proclaimed.
I can't talk publicly proclaimed now, even though he's like, but we all know it's true.
Oh, no, I'm good.
I'm joking.
I don't care what y'all think.
He's like, I know it's true. We each bring a lot to the table, I think.
What? What's so funny? I'm agreeing with
his facial expression. For people who did not see his facial expression, it was like, I'm gonna let you say that, but
oh no,
okay.
I agree with you. The table is a cornucopia of things that have been brought by both of us, so I appreciate it. I think that a lot of what I now bring, a lot of things that people think that I bring to the table now, I would not have been able to acquire without having met you. So I think, yeah, you bring a lot to the table. So
thank
I think
you.
That's a fair thing to say about it. I mean, and also, like, I don't know, maybe it's because we've been married long enough or because we're both more secure. Not that we don't have insecurities, but I don't know. I don't do too much comparing. Like,
that's
at
good.
This point, it's like, why are we?
He used to be real quantitative, y'all. He used to be like, whoa, my bucket's a bit fuller.
Nah.
So I'm really happy that we don't do that anymore.
Oh, yeah. I had to stop being quantitative because we couldn't make it if I had to count all the money that was being spent. If that was the concern, then
there are other things we could be quantitative about.
Yeah, I know. I know. I'm saying when you said quantitative, it made me think about money. And it's like, yeah. So got to keep working or be unhoused in our latter years. So ESPN, keep them checks coming because...
Somebody he's not likes... awkward at all.
Oh, awkward? I'm not awkward. Anyway. Happy holidays. Happy New Year, I
happy
guess.
Happy New Year, everyone. Happy New Year.
It's a wonderful New Year. You got fancy glittery nails.
Do
people know?
Do
people
know?
Do people know how fast? Yeah, they know. If anyone who's been involved in this segment knows that
I love all holidays.
You dress like that was a stupid question for you to ask. Because last time they saw you, you had on antlers, so yes, they know that you're a festive.
He cursed, guys. He must have feelings about my antlers. He does not curse all the time. When he curses, really, y'all, he's fronting for you. He's trying to seem cool. He really does not curse a lot. So when he curses in conversation with me, I curse. I think I've said this before. It sounds like deja vu, but I curse probably too much when I'm talking. And so I don't curse at him, but I curse in conversation with him. When he curses in conversation with me, I'm like, oh, who you mad at? Like, oh, okay, what did I do today? Like, let's find out.
Comedic effect.
Okay, I was wearing antlers. Yeah, because of course, like, I have a whole Christmas headband collection. Yes, and they're not like, they're from H&M, like, not Party City. They're like a little bit more, less costumey, more fashion than Party City. They're H&M children's department level. Luckily, my head's not too big. I can get them on. Yes.
Getting the house back, which is nice. I like that.
Getting the house back from what?
From the Christmas.
Okay, yeah, I knew that's what he meant. And I'm like, I thought he could mean, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe he means from like construction.
Oh, yeah, we're getting the house back from that too.
But from Christmas. I know. Ugh, we still have... happy 12th day of Christmas, actually, as this comes out tomorrow. We still have our big Christmas tree up. We had to take the live one down because it was very dry. And as much as I'm festive, I'm more anxious. And I was like, nah, we're not going to have... We didn't even have the lights on Christmas. I was like, I'm not burning down my house.
House caught on fire.
I know.
Everybody was safe, though, which is nice.
I know. That was so sad. Was it a Christmas tree?
I don't know. Said it, it's like...
Yeah, no. But I mean, Christmas tree fires, you know, they happen more in January than they do in December. So if you have a live tree, honestly, guys, it's probably stopped drinking its water, undecorate it, put it out. But I also just want to, like, because I'm not doing dry January, maybe I'm like a dampish January, I want to like have cocktails by the tree and play a Christmas music, not on the house speakers but from my phone, and still take in the joy of the season.
I think, you know, I'm gonna do a dry January. I've just decided. I've been on the fence. I haven't had anything to drink since this month, so dry January.
Neither
it is declared. It is declared. What do you mean? Oh, no. You're supposed
alone.
It's about healthy. I'm being
can
healthy.
Can we just be damp together?
No, you can be damp. I'm going to be dry. No liquor this January. You don't have to join me. I'm just saying, hearing you say it made me think it was a good idea.
He is so competitive. So he heard me say, I'm going to do a damp January. He's like, I'm going to one up you. I'm going to do a dry January. He is so.
It's not about competition.
This is why
it's
Avery
about
wants
health.
To do club track.
Yeah,
because he heard someone else say, oh, I did club track and it was really exhausting and hard. She's like, sign me up. Where you do that at? Let me show you I can do this without being exhausted or tired or,
like, when the positive things, or I guess maybe you would argue a negative, but when I see them in my kids, it's nice. I'm happy that Avery's a killer. Sometimes you got to kill
shit. Yes, she is.
Sometimes you got to. Sometimes you got to elbow a 12-year-old girl in the face because she tried to take your rebound. It has to be done.
Yeah.
Sometimes when somebody say that this is really hard, you got to do it. It may be hard for you, but it's not for me. Get him, Ave.
So, dry January. You know what? Here's why I don't believe in it. Because it's kind of like a New Year's resolution. And I don't believe in those either. But I kind of also do have New Year's resolutions.
This is absurd.
Other than dry January, do you have any New Year's resolutions?
No, not really. I mean, how do you improve upon perfection? I don't know. By having a dry January.
So you can be more yourself. less affected by the drugs.
My resolution is to
be more yourself.
Just be more me. Yeah. What's your resolution?
So, guys, he does or doesn't think he's the catch in this marriage.
I
realized like the moments where I felt it most and where I felt most happy were like where I was just home with our kids, like cooking dinner or inviting like just your parents over or my parents, like small. We didn't have a big holiday party this year like we do. And I think that like I want to, and when I talk to the kids, of course, you know, Declan's like, I mean, gifts, but then like what makes Christmas special? What makes that? Why do we love the holidays? Like when our family, I think the kids, they generally love the holidays and typically I do too. Like they're really like, it's just like these times with family.
So that's your resolution, is to do more hibernating type of activities with the family?
And but I'm not calling it a resolution because I don't believe in those.
Yeah. What are you calling it?
It's just something I want to do.
All right, cool. Yeah. I mean, I think it's fine to adjust your life using the new year as a benchmark is something that people like to do, but it doesn't matter. I think all throughout the year, you add something new. I've been wanting to be more organized for a long time, but I just can't bring myself to do it.
They're offering a service, which I helped women, the organizers were at our house.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, you guys should have like a subscription service. It's not like just a few hours a month, like at a discount, like that you.
Are they available?
And they offered it. They just offered it yesterday, but it was like based on my suggestion.
Sign me up.
And every 2 weeks they're going to come for 3 hours.
I will appreciate about our new at home life is I'm not like, I get dressed up and we go out on dates and stuff and it's fine, but. I'm not gonna miss it. That's all.
Like, I know.
I'm not gonna miss it.
Well, we went out on New Year's Eve, like just kind of like, I didn't think we could because one, our kids would be around, and two, he had to record Sunday evening. So we had to record Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve. But on New Year's Eve, they ended up being able to record a little bit earlier, excuse me. So we were still able to go out. And we went out like somewhere that you didn't need a reservation, like a lounge, a steakhouse lounge. And it was fine. But then I came home and was like, remind me next time, we could have just ordered a steak and stay home. The thing is, steaks don't get delivered that well. And I really wanted a steak. And I've been cooking and cooking and cooking.
We did have one date during this time, though. Like, we.
And it was chill. I was wearing pajama pants.
It was a surprising date. I didn't expect it was.
I booked it.
It was a free date at the library.
I told him, I was like, I booked it as a free date.
And it was.
I made a donation, though.
I appreciate that. Damn, almost got away
$25.
Without spending. That's a reasonable date. I like it. So it's surprising that you chose it. It was improv and you were really good at it. It was like a free improv class and you dominated the improv at the end. There was a final game and no one could beat you.
And I thought I wouldn't be good at it. So I did make myself a drink, which is why I can't do dry January. It powers my ability to do improv before we went. And it was really fun.
Yeah, it was cool. I liked it.
One thing that was funny to me, though, there was, so let's say it was maybe like 16 people, 15, 16 people. It was like in the room, the activity room at the library. And about half the people were Black, maybe a little bit more than half people were Black. Let's say 9 people were Black there. So in some of the activities.
You had to choose somebody.
You would have to. And a lot of the initial ones, you had to like bounce something to someone else, right? Once it got to a Black person. It didn't get away from the Black people until every Black person. And it felt like, it almost felt awkward, but it was like, no, I'm choosing music. And music chose Holiday. These are people's names. And Holiday chose Phoenix. And Phoenix chose Dominique. And Dominique chose Greg. And then Greg's like, okay, they're no more Black people. Here you go, Lucas. It's your turn. But like every single time we chose
Shout out
each
Lil
other.
Lucas.
Which, and I think it's just like, you choose people.
Was it conscious or was it? Oh, yeah, I guess that's a question. Do you think it was conscious or do you think it was just like?
So I don't know. Every time I did it, I was early on. So in the beginning, I can say from my experience, it was not conscious. But if I had been the last person or the second to last Black person chosen, there was one Black person left. I wouldn't want to be the one that didn't choose my sister or brother and send it over to Lucas.
Did you think you were the only one that noticed this? Do you think the white people, I guess the question is, do you think the white people noticed that?
I don't know what white people noticed.
Once we give it to them, we ain't never going to get it back.
I do not know what white people noticed, but I don't see how they didn't. Because every single time, like, and it wasn't like cultural references that were being made.
No,
like there was
no reason
other
person.
Than I see you. Like, and I think so often being Black, at least growing up, like I always tell my kids that like how, like when I'm in our like kind of predominantly white neighborhood and, but we're in DC. So even in the whitest neighborhood, there are plenty of Black people. Right. And so I'll like wave, like, or just smile or nod my head when I see other Black people. And they notice, as they notice that I didn't necessarily do that with white people, I'm like, oh, I don't know. Like, it's like a recognition thing. It's like, even in this environment, I see you, you see me. Like, I can't not do that. Yeah. And be that way.
But it was unconscious for you.
I think it was unconscious for me. But once I started noticing it,
I'm not going to be the first one.
I'm like, you better not give it back. We got this now.
We're getting close to hiring and firing season for coaches. And it's funny that you bring that up because I think that's like the argument is I don't know if you hire people that look like you or you hire people that make you feel comfortable. And I think oftentimes
race. You make yourself feel comfortable.
Yeah, race is a.
I love people who look like me.
It's funny that this now has become a justification for the bias hiring in the NFL.
I know, but it's like when, no offense, but this improv game, when you're out and you want to wave to someone on the street, like if you're not the person in power, it doesn't have like the negative effect. Like at our kids' elementary school.
The reason why I think that unconsciously or consciously people made the decision that they made in that improv, or the reason why consciously or unconsciously that you're waving at people. And I've mentioned this before that like when you are in a even more white environment, like if I'm in an all black environment, then like acknowledging the black people
it's
seems
too much.
Yeah.
You're not going to get tired.
I mean, it seems unnecessary. And yeah. I mentioned before we were in Aspen and I was surprised where I gave a head nod to a guy who was like baffled. Like, no, this is what we do. Like we the only ones here. And I don't know if it's messaging to them that I don't know exactly what it's messaging. It's more than like, I see you. Hey, and if shit go down, I got your back.
See, here's where we're different. I don't think it means if shit go down, I got your back. I'm not fighting, but you actually, I think really, like he says that, and I think he really feels
it. I don't sincerely believe that. I think that if shit goes down, it means like if something happens, like not necessarily an altercation or physical, but like, I don't know.
There's a fire, you're going back in for him.
No, maybe. No, but it's if, I don't know if
please
I would have ever
thought. Please take your Christmas trees out so Dominique does not have to go back in for you if there's a fire.
I don't know what I think it is, as much as it's like, if there is some instance of bias or whatever, it's like, I don't know. It's honestly, I don't anticipate ever having to do anything. I passed my age of fighting a long time ago, but I think the point is that the reason why it's offensive when the people in power do it is because they are in power.
It's
impactful. This is going to a much deeper and much different conversation than I anticipated.
I'm very deep. I'm not. But no, I see it. This irks me the most. I love my kids' school. They're really like good with diversity in so many ways. But the vice principal who the principal hired recently, there wasn't always a vice principal position, looks like a carbon copy of the principal. And I'm sure she is very like well qualified and stuff, but it's like once that happens, like you just notice it. If it were a black woman who chose a carbon copy of her, I'd probably notice it, but I'd be like, okay, moving on. I'm gonna pretend I don't. But every time, like literally sometimes they're wearing the same boots and the same coat. Like, and I'm like, damn, you couldn't have mixed that up a little bit. Because then the fear too is not because people look alike, it doesn't mean they think alike, but it's more likely that they've had similar life experiences and that have impacted how they think, and therefore like they might think more similarly to someone who looks like them and has had similar experiences. And you want like diversity of opinion, not just diversity of like appearance.
I think people would argue that you're working in an environment, you're going to spend a lot of time with this person. You want to get somebody that you like and someone you feel comfortable with, but that doesn't necessarily lead to the best results or the fairest outcomes.
But, and like if it's just like a two-person environment, perhaps, but in a lot of these positions, whether it's a principal of a school, the coach or leader of a team, you are impacting organization.
You're impacting the whole organization, but I'm saying in those environments, those two people are like owner of a sports team, general manager sports team are working together relatively frequently. I'm not saying it's the right thing. I'm saying that it probably leads to worse outcomes making those choices, but that's probably the motivation behind it.
Basically, we get y'all's accidental racism is what he's trying to say.
Or intentional.
I was trying to be nice.
Well, be honest. Anyway, you got a rose of the day, rose of the week, rose of the month, rose of the year? Any roses?
It is officially sweater weather. I love sweaters. And I wish I could wear them all year, but I can't. But now I can. And the one rough thing about how much I love being festive is like in those weeks of December, even when I wasn't really feeling it, like basically, okay, all of December, I feel like I can only wear Christmas colors and Christmas sweaters. So like, I don't know, it's kind of ties you down. And so now I'm just into my sweaters and I like that.
This doesn't qualify as a Christmas sweater.
I see how you would say it does. I could argue it does because I'm Christian and Kat, in our church, we have an Advent wreath purple. And it's purple and pink, the calendars, but I don't consider this a Christmas sweater now, but I see where you would say that.
What is the festive, or there's no festive nature sweater, it's just a sweater, just a pink sweater
yeah
with purple on it.
Yeah,
All right. Thank you for joining us, Ashley. Thank you to all my great producers, Megan, Serafina, Brian, Kevin. Never forget Cortez. Never forget Cortez. And Charlie. We out.
I feel like you forgot some things.
Did I?
Hotville.
Oh. All right.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.